It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hey everybody, welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here at Champy's on Baxter Street. We are at the place that you can get the best fried chicken, best tamales, best beer, best everything. It's Champy's on Baxter Street. When you come back in many weeks from now, when the Georgia actually plays another home game, be sure to swing by Champy's. My name is Roddy DeBulsey. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm joined by Jake Reuse, R-E-U-S-E. It's not Reuse, it's Reuse. He is the recruiting superstar at UGASports.com. He has a lot of recruiting updates for you that you can read there. And we're also joined, as we are each week, by Jim Donnan, former head coach at the University of Georgia, a guy who knows what's going on, knows this program backwards and forwards because he coached it. So we basically sit around, we ask him questions, and pretend that we know what he's talking about because we really have no clue. So Coach Donnan gives us the true answers, and if you want answers from Coach Donnan, and I know a lot of you do, go ahead and on the 11 Alive Facebook page where you're watching this right now, send in your questions, and please share this with your friends. We'd appreciate that very much. So a big shout-out to 11 Alive for letting us be on their page and letting us come out and have this venue to talk to the Georgia fans. I know there are a lot of questions about the LSU game, but before we do that, I'm going to give you a quick shout-out to Athens Ford, big sponsors of our show, Aaron Overhead Doors, A-A-R-O-N, Aaron Overhead Doors, a big sponsor of the show, and UGA Sports, so we thank them for that. Of course, Your Pie, if you need a great pizza, swing by Your Pie, 58 locations, so there's got to be one near you. Academia Brewing Company, these beers we have in front of us, we need those today after this past weekend.
And, sure. Another beer is exactly what I need after Bourbon Street.
Hey, you little hair of the dog a couple days late. Of course, shout out to Cable East and 365 Game Day, and we will talk more about those later on the show. Georgia's coming off of a bad performance. There's no two ways. They can't sugarcoat it. There's a couple cool things in the game. A couple guys stood out. But, Coach, my take was, I think I tweeted this about the middle of third quarter, Georgia had lost offensively they had lost, defensively they had lost, special teams they had lost, turnovers, penalties, and I'm not big into coaching, but I almost felt like they were outcoached. I don't know what all the calls were, but I did not see an aspect of this game that Georgia won. You have offense, defense, special teams, and they seem to have lost all three of them. That was just my take. Am I wrong?
Well, I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to give you my Bill Belichick imitation. It's on to Florida.
That's appropriate. Yeah.
No, I'm sure people don't want to hear that from me. But, one of the things that happens to you in every phase of life, you get knocked down a little bit, and you got to fight back. And in this situation, we can't sit here and cry over spilt beer or whatever it might be. It's just a situation, as you more than adequately chronicled there. We didn't play up to our standards in any phase, and when we had a chance to make some plays, didn't make them. And they seized a lot of momentum, and they came into the game with a good plan. They caught us off guard with a few things, and they executed, and we didn't. So when you play a good team and they give you their best shot and you don't give them yours, there's pretty much chance that you're not going to come out on top. And we were very fortunate in the first half. Our defense stepped up and kept them to three field goals. It could have been one of those Sheriff Bill deals about it. It could have been a lot worse there in the first half. So I think there's no way that I'm going to sit here and do a lot of humor today, because there's nothing to be happy about from that situation. But there is a light for us in the fact that we do have the middle of the year here. We have the break where we can self-analyze, look at what we can do, what we can't do, maybe look at some different personnel groupings in all phases, work hard on our quick tempo stuff that hurt us on defense, and maybe a little more on offense. But everybody's going to criticize the coach and criticize the team and everything when you don't do as well. But I promise you, those guys practice hard. They didn't do that on purpose. It just ended up just kind of like an avalanche of mistakes that don't usually happen to our team. And we still got the problem stopping the run that we had against Missouri, we've had against everybody. Good running team's going to hurt us a little bit because we don't have that inside presence with our defense, and we have to scheme a little bit. offensively when we're not hitting on all cylinders and not making a lot of first downs, it's hard to be a good offense. You got to have it run more plays. So you couple all that together, and then the kicking game, we made some really critical mistakes in that. And the one special play we ran that didn't work was a good call in a lot of ways, but it never is good when it doesn't work. So I'd be glad. I think the best thing to do here rather than just jabber is just answer more questions today and try to give you everything I can as far as what I feel like is going on. But as far as coaches' decisions, those are ones that are made based on fact and based on their feel for the game. And I told you when I started doing the show, I'm never going to do anything but try to amplify our program. I'm not going to sit here and say what they should have done or what they could have done. I mean, that's up to the coaches. But it's realistic, though, that we didn't play up to what our capabilities were, that's for sure.
I got to ask you this. I definitely want to stick on LSU and talk about some of the things that went on in that game. But, you know, you've been in the arena. I'm sure you've had situations where you had the loss, then followed it up with the bye week. What's the mentality of the team right now with that? Do you want to be back out there fighting for it, or do you want to get in the lab and kind of fix some of these mistakes?
Well, I think one of the things that you have when you have a young team, and it's very well understood that we have the youngest team in the conference, and that's not excuse, that's just the way it is. But sometimes younger people have a hard time getting an imprint in their mind about things. They have a feel that just by association they might be a little bit better than they thought they were, you know what I mean, from the standpoint. Some guys that were on the team in peripheral positions last year that didn't have to make the plays that those guys made last year just thought that they were going to be able to do it this year, and some of them have done it in non-critical situations, but in critical ones like last week, then come through for them. So now the attention has got to be to understand and look, you're not quite as good as you thought you were. We're not quite as good as we thought we are, but we can fix it enough to win a game. That's what's got to happen. You win a game against a team that, you know, you're supposed to beat. Florida obviously has improved, but, you know, we beat them handily last year. But they have won three out of the last four. So the biggest idea here for me answering your question is I think you're going to get more attention from the players. Not that they weren't attentive, but anybody that thought they were a little better than they were, you get knocked off the pedestal and understand that you've got to take care of business and not make mistakes that we made last year. Last week, critical penalties, getting lined up. You know, if you got a 40-second clock, it's one thing. But if you got a 25-second clock and you got to get a playoff on the special teams, you got to get your butt up there and do it. You can't be calling timeout or hurrying when you're trying to punt the ball. I mean, those are things these kids got to understand.
Did you see anything that – because I know you would spend a little time scouting LSU. You'd watch some of their stuff, but I know it's not – you didn't break down their entire season so far, but did you see them do anything that Georgia did not look like they had practiced for or prepared for? Because we asked a bunch of the players, and I said, hey, did they do anything different this week that you didn't prepare for? They all said no.
I think one of the things they did maybe is a little more tempo than they'd shown to try to keep us from subbing, because we have a lot of sub package. We've gone over that. But the other thing they did, and I applaud their coaches, regardless if it's offense or defense, is if you got something going, stick with it. They did a really good job of running the same plays over and over and going with their base stuff, and, you know, they didn't really deviate much for it. I mean, it was working, so they stayed with it, and they used a little bit of formation, and then the kid did enough with his legs to keep some plays going that would have gotten them off the field, our defense off the field, but they made first downs. And that was critical. And every time he needed to make a throw when the guy was open, he hit him too. That was critical, man. I mean, you know, we'd miss some throws. Maybe there were routes run wrong or whatever it might be. But there's a lot of difference between some of those passes they hit and some of the ones we miss. And in a big game, you got to hit them. I mean, I always used to tell our players, and I'm not going to give a lot of philosophy, you don't know which play in the game is going to be the difference, what your role is. But when you got a chance to make a play, you got to make it, because you don't get a mulligan. You don't get a chance to say, oh, my bad. Hey, you got to make those plays. And we were very inefficient at making and defending plays and very inefficient at executing plays against them. And that's the difference. And that's why Florida won last week. Yep. I mean, they made play after play. They rushed for 215 yards. Their quarterback hit some big passes. They hit a couple special plays on them. And their defense reared up when they had to and got some turnovers. I don't think LSU had a turnover, did they?
I don't believe so.
No, I think Georgia had
Georgia had four.
We had four.
I want to ask you, because it was early.
Well, you got to burn yourself already.
I do. I'm ready, man. I've got a lot of questions, hey. and you're the man I come to when I got them. The thing that a lot of people point to.
No, I just like your intensity.
Lot of people point to the idea that that fake field goal early in the game was a big momentum shift, and it was something that Georgia maybe wasn't able to come back from. Just your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, like you said, if it works, you look like a genius.
It was a momentum shifter because of two things. We didn't get to three, which was pretty much automatic, and then they came back with seven, which is a 10-point turnaround, and they made a tremendous march there. You know, I think that's when they got the 47-yard run on third and one, but – you know, when you look at special plays and fakes and all, those aren't just picked up and say, hey, well, why don't we fake one? Hey, you study a team, and it's all based on percentages. And to call a fake, you got to feel pretty good about it's going to work, you know. I mean, I've had some that worked and some that didn't. But, you know, that's a good reaction by their defense, too. I mean, they got three guys right now guys being on the All-American teams. One of them I saw, they got three guys on their defense, you know, the linebacker and the secondary.
Yeah, White, Delpit, and
Greedy Wilson. Greedy. So they got good players over there, and they were on top of it. But it definitely was a big play in the game because at that point, as much as you'd like to think that LSU thought they could – be as dominant as it were, it was up for grabs right there. But all of a sudden, that gave them a lot of juice. I mean, any way you look at it, because all of a sudden now they're up 10 instead of being 3-3.
I want to go back to what you're talking about, the guys making plays. And when I guess the one thing that stood out to me, aside from, you know, losing all aspects of the game, the one thing I had not seen to this point were missed tackles. Guys being hit, contacted, you know, and I don't mean you put a hand on a guy who's running past you at a bad angle. I mean full, you know, chest to back, you know, body contact. Those guys spinning out of it, making plays, and like you just said, you know, some of those runs, this guy's able to break a tackle, and what should have been the three and out or the fourth out, five and out, that should have got them off the field, those right. Converted third downs. And so the question that I have for you is, we haven't seen that all year. Is that just a one-game fluke?
Well, you got good backs.
How's that happen?
I think we really hadn't seen that dominant a back this year.
I got you.
From anybody. But, you know, their tackling, if you look at it, usually when a guy makes a good run, it's a combination of good running but poor tackling. They couldn't wrap up Holyfield, and, you know, that happens too. But and we didn't go to them as much as maybe we could have, for sure. But that's the next question I got for you. That's another thing that, you know, I don't want to get involved in that because I don't know what the plan was. But I do feel like this about our tackling. I thought because he had to make so many, I thought LeCount really tackled well for the most part. But the ones that stood out for everybody, the ones he missed. So when you miss them back there, then it's Katie bar the door. But he really saved our butt a couple of times with really good plays up there close to the line of scrimmage. But inside linebacker, with exception of, and I don't read these grades or anything, but I know Crowder played pretty good. But
he did.
We didn't make as many plays with our inside people. I thought Jordan continues to play heavy presence inside and did a good job up front, and Clark did too. You know, he made some good plays, but when you get beat like that and give up so many yards running and passing and that many points, there's not a whole lot you can say good about your defense.
Well, yeah. We talked about the idea of Georgia kind of going away from the run. Did you see anything out of LSU necessarily that necessitated that? I mean, did they start to load things
well,
up?
Well, one thing that helped them there on that one drive, we ran nine straight times, but they stopped us on first down with, you know, like 2 or 3 yards. So now you're in the red zone, which is tougher to run the ball. There's no question about it. They're loaded up. So we called a pass on second down, and, you know, Terry broke open, but we weren't able to see him. But, you know, we've been a pretty good red zone passing team. So, you know, there wasn't anything wrong with the calls, just the execution. But I think this and everybody self-reflection, which our staff I'm sure has done and which they'll do this week, is you got to look at who your players are and how much are they getting the ball and or who's in the game and whatever it might be. And that's what you do on a self-scout here after seven games and see what's been good for us and what hadn't, and let's get to meat and potatoes and get it to them. But, you know, in a big game like that, when you're down 10 and we got – you know, a chance there with that Mecole's return, you got to make something happen there, and we didn't do it. I mean, you got to feel like psychologically that swing there was as big as that fake field goal, because deep down last week they lost the game. They were ahead 19-14 in the fourth quarter. And all of a sudden now it's 19 to, you know, we've got another score there. We're one score away. Who knows, 19-12. But that's a lot of ifs. But two times in the red zone, we came up with nothing that really hurt us. The fake field goal, and then in the fourth quarter, getting a sack with that Jake got, you know. So,
yeah, that was, I wanted to go back to when you're looking at those, that series of three and outs. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, well, so-and-so didn't get enough touches. So this guy didn't get enough carries. This guy didn't get enough passes thrown his way. This guy wasn't targeted enough. And I think
we didn't get enough first downs.
I was it four straight three and outs?
Yeah, I believe it was.
So 12 plays. I mean, and you're looking for at least one of those drives to be nine plays. And you, and that's just one of the four. And you went four straight three and outs. And I guess
– you talking about in the second quarter or what?
The second quarter. I guess my question goes back to did Dave Aranda do anything that drove Georgia – did he see something? Did he out scout Georgia and said, "Look, we're going to take this away from you"? Because I couldn't see anything. I don't know what was going. I don't understand their inefficiency.
I think more than anything, the thing that he was able to do, I taped it, went back and watched the game. I wish I had one of those clickers like I did when I was coaching. But I think
everyone, let's get a Kickstarter for Coach.
I'm just saying. I think that he did enough with his pressure. With the different fronts, bringing a strong safety off the slot. I think your guy Dane did a good job on that. But there was different ways that they got a five- or six-man pressure, you know, without doing a whole lot. And they were able to play man coverage on us a lot better than I thought they would. I thought our slots and tight ends would open up better. Miko opened up on that first one. But, you know, we played the first almost – halfway into the second quarter before we had a wide receiver catch a pass. Yeah. You know, our first 10 passes, we were 2 out of 10. First pass of the game was to Nault, and then we had a couple of drops, and then we had that tip ball that Harrion caught, but we didn't hit any balls to our – and you're not going to make first downs against a good team unless you hit those if you're going to call a pass. But we were struggling there for identity in the set. But we came back, good adjustments at halftime, and had a good march. Ended up not scoring but except a field goal. But, hey, that's about as enlightening as I can be about what
happened. No, that helps. That helps because, you know, everyone – and this is it happens on the UGA Sports Dog Vent where everybody's talking about the game right now. It happens on Twitter. It happens on Facebook. Everybody's talking about it. And I always say this when people complain about Jim Chaney or, you know, Mike Bobo, whoever the hell, you know, Schottenheimer – when everyone complains, why aren't you running the damn ball? And I'm always like, well, can you tell me what the defense was? I'm bouncing off your question because I was –
well, that's true, but I'm glad you are defending him, and I am
I'm not,
too.
I'm not defending him. I don't even know. I was just curious.
You're just saying it's all based on – but to me, that game looked a lot like 2016 when we couldn't make a lot of first downs and we were struggling for an identity because we would miss a pass. You know, Jacob would overthrow a guy or a guy would drop it, or we would have a penalty, or, you know, we came up short so many times in 16. Yeah. Just a couple more yards and that's three more plays. Saturday, in the middle of that game, that looked like the same kind of team that was struggling for some identity. And as a play caller, you don't know, is it, what are we going to do? I mean, what can we do to do better? You know, I mean, you're looking at all the different areas. But basically, for the most part, our line blocked okay. We didn't have a lot of dominating play. When you call 37 passes, you're going to have some sacks.
Yeah.
And you're going to get out executed some. But Andrew Thomas is – defense. The guy's playing on, you know, he hurt his one ankle, you know, and missed a couple of games. Then he hurt his other ankle against Vanderbilt, I think. So, I mean, he's playing out there with all he's got. Kenley comes out there with the MCL.
Kenley shouldn't have been out there playing.
But, you know, he
I'm
played.
I'm not banging on what you're saying. He was injured very
badly.
But
our whole offensive line played the whole game, all five of them, and they, you know, they weren't as good as, you know, they needed to be, but they weren't that bad either. So, I mean, I can't say anything else, but
no,
but the overview is when you don't make explosive plays and you're not a team that grinds it out, we're not a grinded out team yet, then you're going to have a hard time. We didn't get any explosive games in the passing game until the end of the game, and we didn't get any you had a couple of nice long runs, but got to hopefully these backs can get the ball more and we can be more consistent.
You mentioned not a grinded out team yet. And, you know, I think that that's something that Kirby Smart has been pretty clear that that's what he wants out of this team, the ability to lean on guys.
I'm talking about grinding out compared to last year.
I mean, as far as that part. I was going to say, you know, was this kind of the first game where you think Georgia's youth maybe was an issue?
You know, I don't know. At this point, you've been here since January. I mean, you've practiced so much and you've been in enough games on the road where I don't think it – we didn't get a lot of jumping off sides. I thought we were pretty poised on that, you know. So, but at the most part, just didn't hit any passes. I mean, our passing game wasn't anything like it needed to be, whether it's drop, missed routes, overthrows, protection. You know, our passing game didn't do much. And because of that, when you throw a pass on a running down – and it doesn't complete, boy, you're in
the world of hurt.
Because now you've maybe got one more down to make it or sometime. And, you know, Switch, of course, we ran all the time. He used to tell me, he said, you got to really love it if you call a pass.
Cause yeah, you call 37.
The other team – no, I mean, I'm just – because the other team is so glad that, you know, that you're throwing it. When you're predominantly running team like we were, but because if it's incomplete, then that's one less time ahead. But I think our situation is we've been, if you look at our MO, we've been an efficient passing team. Guys hit close to 65% of his passes career, and all of a sudden you don't do that, then that gives you a lot less first downs.
Yeah, we're going to talk quarterbacks here in a minute. I did want to touch on something you said about you never know which play is going to
– I feel like I'm in an electric chair here, man. I'm on a hot seat.
Hey, this is – you've
already been fired, man. I was fired in 2000. Come on.
No, I was actually going to compliment –
I'm Kirby Smart, man.
I was going to compliment you on your discussion about you never know which play is the one that is going to change the outcome of a game, and that's actually a – this is an advertisement for UGASports.com because we have Dane Young, who does a great breakdown after the game's over. You know,
and have a French fry on there.
And he's splitting it up between offense and defense. So he's going to have two. And some of the points he made about Georgia's offense were pretty good. The defensive one's coming. I also like what –
Did he play football?
I don't know. I just saw his analytical skills. I'm like, I got to hire that guy.
I'd like for him to – do something before the game one time and project something that's – make it hard. It's easy to sit there and watch it and say all that. Nothing against Dane, but, hey, project what they should do.
Well, he's been doing that for the other team, saying here's what to watch out for in LSU, and he nailed some of the stuff LSU was going
to
do.
Tell him what to watch out for us. What should we do against Florida? Come on, coach us up.
He might do that. We also had –
tell him you give him a raise if he can predict what we should do against Florida.
Well, yeah, that's about a $7 million a year raise if you can predict what's coming. I also like what Trent Smallwood does, and he goes back and says, here's some of those plays where, you know, maybe it's a second and six, and the play doesn't go like you want it to, and that has a much bigger determination on the outcome besides just the obvious one like the fake field goal. You know, it's those little hidden plays, and he actually calls it what we missed, and I think he's going to have that later this week. A lot of analysis in that piece, so when you get a chance, swing by UGA Sports and check that out. So
something I would like to see – on our site, is there any way we can see LSU's grades for how Pro Football Focus grades them? Because I like to see how they graded.
Why aren't we posting those guys?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay.
I like to see though how many of their guys played.
Yeah.
At each position, what they felt they played against the grades that we got.
I'm sure Sam does their snap count. And
you have just witnessed content creation happen, folks.
No, I mean, seriously,
it's a great idea.
I sent you a text yesterday asking, but I got no response.
I did not get that text.
But don't you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, it's a fantastic idea.
Absolutely.
Coach. And in a lot of the games past, you know, when Georgia's winning by 26 points, you know, we're not exactly thinking, well, we need to post the Vandy grades to show how badly they played. But, no, in a situation like this, I think it would be
– Vandy took the gas Saturday. Yeah. You guys are down there in the French Quarter, or you were down there pregame and all. I was scouting Florida, watching them, and Vandy had that game under control and went into the fetal position.
Yeah, well, you've scored 21 points. That's enough to beat Florida.
But, I mean, they completely put the gas.
Todd Grantham scared them.
Well, I mean, after that threatening. You know, he's got some history up there, though.
Yeah, he does.
He knows how to get there.
I've seen that movie twice.
And, you know, he figured it worked on Franklin and it worked on Mason. But, yeah. But seriously, let's get back to this.
Now, I noticed y'all are eating all my chicken tenders there.
Yeah,
from
chicken tender basket.
I hadn't touched the tender because I know I wouldn't want you to.
Chicken tender basket, little champy sauce, and some fries.
Tell me about that sweet heat real quick.
The sweet heat is fantastic. It's a little barbecue-y, but a little bit of that sweetness on the end of it. I like to take it, mix it with the champy sauce. And then pour it all over your
You're disgusting, Jacob.
You know what?
You were disgusting.
I just want to say this.
I hate that we lost, and I hate bad. I was really looking forward to you guys giving us a Duncan Hines report about what you had to eat down there and drink and all, but I don't even want to hear it now.
No, we won't talk about it.
You can't have fun when you lose.
Well, Jake was down there for 2 weeks, so I mean, we don't have. It's only an hour long show. We can't tell you about all the food he ate. So,
I mean,
it was tough.
I had McDonald's. That was it. Because,
yeah.
You know, I'm suffering with the team.
All right.
I want to give a quick shout out to Athens Ford, the big sponsors of our show, and they do have some the October deals. These are good through October 31st. These are good through Halloween. They're really trying to move these 2018 vehicles, and I want everybody to go out there and buy one. Again, you can get a 2018 Ford Focus for either $13,999, under $14,000 for a new Ford Focus, or you can get 0% APR financing for 60 months for qualified buyers. So Focus, under $14,000. Just remember it that way. If you need a little, what do you call those, mnemonic
device?
Yeah, that's it. I need you to say all the big words for me. Anything over three syllables, I need you to pronounce
it
for me.
What does that do?
A mnemonic device is something that you create in order to help yourself remember, like Roy G. Biv, if you're talking about the spectrum, the color spectrum.
Yeah, see,
I like it.
And see, I mean, he's a teacher. That's why I ask him for stuff like this, because he's actually taught people in the past. So
I thought you were talking about something on a car.
I am. No, you need to remember that you can get a Ford Focus for under $14,000. You can get a 2018 Ford Escape for under $20,000, $19,995, or you get $2,000 off and 0% APR financing for 60 months for qualified buyers. So you can get the Escape for 2018 for under $20,000. So 2018 for under $20,000. Think of it that way. I'm trying to come up with one for each one. And then my favorite, the Ford Explorer that we just took to New Orleans and then out to Baton Rouge. Kind of wish I'd waited for this deal. $9,500 off or $2,000 off and 0% APR financing for qualified buyers. From the 2018 Ford Explorer, you can't beat that. I mean, that's almost 10 grand off. So swing out to Athens Ford. And, again, if you need any service done, check with them. They do fantastic work. You want to jump into some questions real quick?
Yeah, I do. A lot of people, and this, I'm just going to kind of throw this to both of you because I think we'll have individual responses here. A lot of people wondering about the field's dynamic, Coach. A lot of people saying, you know, the idea of getting a guy in rhythm, one play, one in, one out. Just your take. I mean, what do you see from Georgia in the way that they're using Fields right now? What's the ultimate goal with what they're doing for him right now?
You know, I think every situation is based on what the coaches think, regardless of where you're coaching. And you know, a situation for some teams is different than others. So it's hard for me not knowing what their dynamic is, what they tell the kids, what they practice, to know what the substitution pattern is. But it's got to be a little bit more difficult than maybe playing the whole series. But I know Coach Spurrier used to run the plays in with the quarterbacks. They'd alternate every play. So it's not like it hadn't happened before, but – you know, to this point, it had worked fairly well, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But this is some situation that, you know, I'm not passing the buck or doing anything as far as – because I just feel like I don't know enough about the dynamics of practice or – but I do know that there's got to be a reason that they've used him based on the fact they feel like he can help to put him in for a guy that had a winning record like the guy has. So we'll just have to see what happens from here forward. But I think at the least, it had worked until now. And then, you know, it worked Saturday some. But, you know, at the end of the game, maybe they felt like Jake has had some hot second halves. I mean, you know, he really has had some. And maybe they thought he was going to be able to bring them back. So I don't know. I never did figure out what they were doing there. But, you know, a lot of times that can be a harrowing situation. You get in at the end of a game and you can have something happen that, you know, with – that doesn't help your psyche at all coming in as a backup. So who knows what the deal was.
I dislike the idea that I've seen out there that, well, once the game was out of hand, you should put Fields in and let him finish it out. When was the game out of hand?
Right. At what point were you willing to concede?
In other words, at my point, when Georgia's down, I think they were down like 13 points. There's 5 minutes left, something like that. I'm like, okay, you know, I don't see this happen. I don't even remember the score differential. But I know that what I would consider – game out of hand and what Kirby considers game out of hand is a difference of about 1 second left on the clock. I mean, yeah, he is going to fight to the very end because he's got in his mind, we need two possessions. We score on this one. We get we do a short kick. We get it back. We get 8 points here. How are you going to get those two scores in 5 minutes, those two touchdowns you need? Are you going to do it with a freshman quarterback who hasn't played a whole lot, or are you going to do it with the guy that's, 19-3 as a starter, something like that?
Well, consequently, too, you know, they're talking about, well, hey, they put two in the second half against us last year. But, you know, you got to remember how much Tua played in conference games going into that, and the fact that he had all of the championship practices going in that they were looking at him to be ready. And Nick has obviously said this, that they were going to put Tua in to see how he did with the idea that they might still come back to Hurts. It wasn't a given they were going to stay with him. So I think that situation is their situation, Alabama. We got ours here. We have a very small sample size to know what this kid's done in the games and what he's done in practice. So, but at the same time, if you're going to put him in there, cut him loose. That's the only thing.
That's what I
got to
say.
You got to cut him loose, and that's something that going forward, I'm not saying prior to this, but he's got too much ability, you know, potentially. Let's see if he can do it if he's in there. If not, let him
throw the damn ball. Come on. And I was going to say this. Again, my definition of when the game's out of hand and Kirby's are completely different. But the thing I do take, I'm not offensive, the thing I do disagree with Kirby Smart on, and maybe Jim Chaney, whoever's calling that rotation, I do not like the one play and out. Put the guy in, let LSU look at him and go, okay, is he throwing, is he running? Give him a series. Hell, you went 4-3 and outs in a row. And Kirby Smart said, you know, we go with the hot hand. The plan is there is no plan. You had Holyfield, who was killing it. Swift was killing it. Then all of a sudden you go to Herrien's not doing that well. He misses a few blocks. Go back to the guys that had the hot hand. For a while there, Jake did not look like he had the hot hand. He was missing some reads. He's missing some open receivers. He's missing some throws. Go to that spark. You mentioned that Fields was a spark the week before. Go to him. What's the worst that can happen? 3 and out? Well, hell, you had 4 of those. So go one more time.
But the only thing about it I would defend about moving them in and out, we weren't making enough first downs where, you felt like that you could maybe do – you know, you thought like we could maybe make some and then didn't do that. But I guarantee you that it's a tough situation, and that's why the coaches – are the coaches and we're over here. There's going to be a lot of ways to look at it, but the thing that makes it harder for everybody is the guy is just so talented, and you see some other guys in the same situation doing a pretty good job. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is doing well, but you know, Trevor, I didn't think had near the competition that this guy had and Jake. So we'll just have to see, and it's not fair to Jake, it's not fair to Justin for us to get here and figure out who's going to do what. It's all going to be, I got a lot of faith in Kirby and Chaney and Coach Coley and Coach Johnson that they'll put us in the potentially what gives us the best chance to have a victory over the Gators.
All right, yeah, we got several questions. A lot of people talking about that inside linebacker play. That was something that you mentioned. You know, obviously Crowder had a pretty good day. Monty Rice and Juwan Taylor struggled a little bit more. Chris Lambert, intern extraordinaire, the man himself, says, do you guys think that we'll see any changes at the inside linebacker position? Do we start seeing more Quay Walker and Channing Tindall, going forward? I think that that's definitely in the cards. I think that that was – honestly, regardless of what was going to happen, that was going to have to be in the cards. Because you're talking about Taylor's gone after this year. Tay's not too far off, I don't think. What is he, a junior?
I don't know. He's been around quite
he's
some
been
time.
A while. I forget. He played like run back, now he's linebacker. But even still, you want to bolster those ranks. You need those guys, and you were counting on those guys as part of this last class to be the future of that position. Now, I'm not saying that Nate McBride, Jaden Hunter, and that crew are not the future there. But I'm saying there's huge expectations on these guys that came in this class, especially Channing Tindall and Quay Walker.
I actually would like to see a little more McBride in there, see what he could do.
Here's the point, though, there, and I'm going to take the other, is does anybody out there honestly think that if those guys were ready, they wouldn't be playing? Campbell's playing. Kamara's playing. I mean, these freshmen are playing at other roles. So, if they were better,
Mays and Wilson,
Mays. If they're good enough, they'll play. But you know, it's a pretty sensitive area to be an inside backer, making the checks, making the calls. Even though your athleticism can be good, a lot of people are counting on you to get people lined up and stuff too. So, and we had some situations where we weren't lined up, but I do feel like their athleticism gives us hope that maybe. Maybe we might just say, look, we might cut back a little bit and play them, and what we might give up in scheme might be better off in guy making a play. You know,
but
who knows?
But you've said several times, and I think it's important to remember, that's a very tough position to get on the field early on in your career. Remember, guys, Roquan Smith was not Roquan Smith when he started his freshman year.
It's just different when you got to play the run, you got to play the pass, you got a big old Chilardo coming off on you. And you know you got to be physical, quick, everything. And we don't have right now overwhelming a performance there at that position. I mean, we're making plays, but the plays are down the field. We don't make a lot of. I tell you what, I was encouraged about Saturday was seeing a guy like Robert Bill. We hadn't even been talking about, and he comes in there and makes some plays. I mean, that's player development. You know, there's a younger guy. We've been talking about Cox and Anderson and those guys, but here's Bill come in there and do it. He comes in there and does pretty good. And I will say this: that everybody's talking about the yardage that Campbell gave up, but you know, when you got a prototype number one defensive back like we have and they had in Greedy Wilson, you don't go after that guy much. They didn't throw many to Baker, so who else are they going to throw at if he throws in the flat? So, but for all those people that think they know that Campbell gave up a 50-yard pass, kiss my rotten butt. He made the right play. Another guy was supposed to cover the guy.
Yep.
Hey, look at the tape that he came
you
up.
You got to hear with your facts and analysis.
Campbell,
so he gave up. No, we can't have that.
He gave up a lot of. He gave up some passes, but if
well,
a guy,
yeah, they're going to throw at him.
If a guy goes in the flat in motion, you're not going to stop a guy for. He's going to throw it out there for 4 yards, but he did give up a couple plays. You know, jump balls and all that, but he's still learning too. But that one play for 50 was not. No, that wasn't number three's play. That was somebody else. And that's the only thing I'm divulging that I know that you don't know.
Until we ask the next question. Then
no,
he
I'm talking about
– No, you're right.
Because I wanted to make sure before I defended him, because if you just look at him, he comes right up, which he's supposed to do in that coverage, and be ready to play the run and play the short. Somebody's got to cover him in behind, and they didn't. And, of course, all of our people say, well, he got beat. You know, hey, he made a mistake, 50 yards, and, you know, that's his grade.
Yeah, no, but, he's – and the thing about it is, too, with Tyson – I thought that he played okay, all things considered. He was tackling guys as well as anybody on Saturday. And down the road, you want a guy to be battle tested. I mean, at some point, you know, he was going to have to face a learning
curve.
Holy
crap, your five-star freshman didn't win the game for you.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
while your D1 corner, or while your top 32 round pick wasn't getting chased at all.
Exactly. So I mean,
we beat Greedy Wilson a couple of times, and you know, we had that one throw over there when it was out of bounds that we thought Robertson might have made if it, a little better pass there. That was a well conceived play because we ran the jet sweep. Looks like he's going to get it. Then we ran the yo-yo off of it, and it was a very good call. But hey, we don't get credit. They don't get credit for that call because it didn't work.
That was a good play. It was a fantastic play. I mean, they had to review it, and I thought that was the type of creativity that we like to see.
We still scored on that drive, though.
Yeah. I got a real good question here, but I want to hit this first.
You know, right now I'm having the Hunker Down Brown Ale.
Is that your second one or first?
Well, come on, Coach. I mean, why you bust me on the show?
Why are you putting that man out there like that?
I'm just saying it's not going down very fast.
Well, no, because we got a lot of questions. We got to hammer you over.
Let's go. Hammer me some more. I got nothing left.
But give me
some gloves.
We got these beers from Academia Brewing Company. And I want to let everybody know that October 13th was Academia's one-year anniversary. So congratulations to them. And they're actually going to celebrate it a little bit further. They're going to celebrate it this Saturday. They're going to have special kegs. They're going to be tapped throughout the day starting at 11 a.m. So you can get over there about 11 a.m.
What day is that?
You got this Saturday. No game to go to this week. It's bye week.
You going
to
be there, Ronnie?
Well, of course. They got all these special kegs. And when those guys do special kegs, they're fantastic.
Is your suspension over?
Dude, the restraining order is misspelled, so I'm in there.
I tell you what you need to do Saturday, Ronnie, after you go have a few shooters over there. You need to take your wife to go see A Star Is Born.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Go see old Lady Gaga get after it. And
that's what we need to do on the show is have the old Larry Munson movie group, and Coach Donna can tell us what's going on.
No, I usually don't go to the movie but much.
You liked it?
It was good. I mean, it was strong.
Well, you know, you can go to the University 16 after you swing by Academia. They're going to have live music at 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 8 o'clock, and the Cerebus
Tripletta
sandwich is going to be available for your eating pleasure. It's a triple stack of ham, pastrami, and pork shoulder topped with melted cheese, onions, peppers, and a house-made sauce. And it's going to be their first bottle release.
Now we have the growlers. They'll keep the paddles warm for you, too, after the Cerebus.
So you're going to have live music, the Cerebus Tripletta sandwich, you know, with all those meats on it, and all these special kegs are going to be popped open. They're going to have commemorative bottles of red wine. Red wine, barrel-aged everything he touches. I got to get that.
Everything he touches is their Tarbret Saison. Right. This is the red wine
barrel-aged version of it. Sorry. And you can take those home, the commemorative bottles. Plus, they have their regular crowlers. And if you'd like to pre-purchase a bottle for pickup, they're $10 each, and you can register at academia.craftseller.com.
There you go.
So, one-year anniversary for them, and thanks to them for the beer.
Good first year, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And if you want –
I mean, Champions continues to win the trophy every year for best fried chips 4 years in a row, isn't it?
Yeah, there needs to be a tamale championship, too.
That's what we had last week. Look, I'm ready for that. I'll be the judge, in fact.
No, you're tainted. You can't be biased. Unbiased.
All right, Ronnie Brown here. I think this is a very good question because George has got 2 weeks to get ready for this. He says, what area do y'all expect to see the most improved against the Florida Gators? Coach?
Well, I hope that we're going to get, you know, do a little bit better job of the inside running game, maybe a little bit better open field tackling, certainly more consistency in our passing game than we showed last week, although it's been pretty good. And just the other part of getting some explosive plays, and hopefully Kamara can do a little better job of being consistent punting too. So I think those would be the five areas.
Roddy?
I definitely expect to see a better tackling performance. Scarlett will eat you alive if you give those half-assed arm tackles, you know, up around the shoulders. He will run through those all day, and he will score on you at will. You got to get that kid low. You got to bring him to the ground. And I think that we'll see. I just cannot imagine being on Kirby Smart's defense, looking at the tackles that were missed and knowing that he's got seven practices. Before, you know, five of in full pads, maybe, or at least in thud, that you're not going to correct. Scheme things can break down. Individual performances can mess up, you know, but Kirby Smart is a conservative, high, you know, play the percentage thing coach. and that is a fundamental. Tackling is fundamental. He is not going to lose a game based on poor fundamentals. So that's, to me, the one thing Ronnie Brown asked. I definitely see better tackling in that game,
I
which is weird because we see horrible tackling in that Georgia-Florida game every year.
Sure. I think it's got to be – you mentioned the inside run game, and I think for Georgia that has to be a huge focus for the rest of the year because otherwise teams are going to continue to exploit that, and that's something that you're going to encounter with Benny Snell.
Benny Snell's licking his lips.
Yeah, Jordan Scarlett is going to go after you up the middle. Felipe Franks is a guy who can take off and run
on
you.
Good point.
So they've
Georgia
got –
Georgia Tech, they're going to go for it on fourth down.
No doubt.
That fullback dive up that A-gap.
So you've got to focus on that. I think if you're wanting to correct the biggest mistake, that's where you start. Other than that, got to get this quarterback and wide receivers back on the same page. Too many floaters, too many just over the heads. You've got to get that knocked down because, like you said, Coach, it is so crucial. You only get so many of those opportunities.
Right. Man, you go back to the old, which Kirby, I know he heard me say it a million times, two words that are very prevalent in every game. If only.
Yeah.
And yes. What I always say is the only way that's going to help you is you change those two words to next time. The next time that situation that you have it, you will have profited from it. If you didn't, it's not going to help you to make a mistake. So the next time some of these things occur to us in a game, hopefully we'll do a better job with it.
Brent Tucker says, thoughts on the fake field goal. We already touched on that, but he says, why risk getting an All-American kicker hurt? Roddy, go for it.
No, I'm just saying that's exactly in our post game.
That's true. We did talk
like,
about
why
that. We talked about
but,
that.
But, I mean, you don't really think about him gang tackling. I mean, it's either going to be outhouse or penthouse. He's going to run in there and hand it to the official, but you don't expect him to get gang tackled on a fake field goal. So, I mean, it's a risk reward, but certainly it looks bad when he gets pummeled like that, and he doesn't necessarily look like the guy you want running the ball on Burma Road.
I got to tell you, I've made this comparison.
His glasses more than anything.
He looked like a newborn fawn when he took it. He started, he was gangly.
That's
and
mean.
I thought it was a broken play.
I did too.
When it happened.
Where you and I were sitting on the field, when all those guys rushed in, it blocks out our angle.
Did you hear fire? You know, that's what you say if you have a bad snap or something, you say fire. You know,
you can't hear anything in that stadium.
Let your team know that you got a bad play and you run a fake. But I tell you, I was just looking at the goalpost and hoping it was going through, and then I realized it was a fake, and I said, "Well,
I don't bang on that one. I don't bang on the coaches a whole lot, but I hated that call. Absolutely hated it.
What if it had worked?
I still would have hated it.
Okay.
Honest to God. But just because of the fear of getting the one – your punter was having a rough day, a very bad day.
Well, he hadn't had but one punt to that point, had he?
No, I'm just saying for the whole of the day, he had a bad day. And I'm just thinking if he'd had a bad day and you hadn't had Rodrigo in there kicking, that's just – I just don't like – in other words –
Well, we looked at it like why it would work, not why he was going to get
hit. Yeah, that's true.
So
good. It's good. It's just to me, I think it came not – some people say a team does that when they're scared. You know, you see a team that's outmatched, they pull a stunt like that to throw them off, or they lead off with a onside kick just to change things up, try to catch the better team unawares. That's not the way I saw that decision come out. I thought that decision came out of we see something, we're going to outcoach them. We got something they're not going to expect.
We ran an onside kick against South Carolina last year. We weren't scared against them. Yeah. I mean, what was the score then?
I don't remember.
Remember that when we did it and didn't work?
Yeah. Yes, I do remember that.
Hey, there's a reason not to do it. It didn't work.
Some good points, Roddy. Yeah. I can't. There's no way I'd get on any kind of arguing show with you.
No, Maurice Carter says, looking ahead to next week, he says, knowing that Todd Grantham is a blitz-happy defense, do you think that Georgia's going to see more screens and counters in that one? Do you think that they'll incorporate that into the offense this week?
I think misdirection's always good against a pressing team. Yeah. Screens aren't that great because they play man coverage, and they're covering the man that they're throwing the screen to. So a slow screen is not that great, but, you know, screens behind the line with, like bubbles and stuff like that, man-to-man, you can block them maybe. So might see a little bit, but maybe a little more misdirection would be good against Grantham, and maybe a little more tempo where they use that Grantham signal with the palms up where they're not lined up, hopefully.
And there were a couple. We saw a couple of those in this Georgia game recently. I love that we saw in the first couple drives some really long draws. Jim Chaney dialed in there, and those were especially
delayed draw, right?
Delayed. That's what I was looking for. Those delayed draws were nasty. I liked especially when you give Swift time and he sees how that line develops out. He sees the one-on-one matchups, and then he just shot through there like a rocket a couple times.
So. He did.
And then, of course, LSU saw, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. So they made their adjustment, took that away from Georgia. But I thought that was as much as grief as a lot of people want to give Jim Chaney for play calling. I thought that those delayed draws were pretty fantastic. Real quick, I want to give a quick shout-out to Aaron Overhead Doors.
Let me move my head so they can see the number.
if you get a chance, the number is 678-960-3360. You can call and request an appointment. The appointment will be free. If you need anything done with your overhead door, your big garage door, they call it overhead door because it goes over your head. I always call it a garage door. But it's AARON, Overhead Doors. They have five-star ratings from Google. They have them from Yelp. They have them from the Better Business Bureau. 2017 Angie's List Super Service Award winner. I mean, I can sit here and read all their awards they've gotten. Let's just say that they are five-star across the board. They are what you want. They do not have a down game. They bring their A game every time, and they will kick your broken garage door's butt. There's no two ways about it. And they're huge Georgia people. They're big Georgia fans. I'm sure that the bosses were down in New Orleans. Well, yeah, actually, they might have been working Saturday. But if anybody was watching that game with just absolute intensity, it's the folks at Aaron Overhead Doors. They got a bunch of Georgia alumni working there. And the actual guys that are doing the installations and repairs are full-time employees. They're not contractors who, don't care if they destroy your house or scuff your paint or, launch a spring into the windshield of your car. These guys are truly professionals, and they actually do training. And last thing about it, they also do a lot of charity work. So, they go to people that need garage doors fixed and stuff like that, and they do it. So I think typical Georgia alumni giving back to the people of the state. So big shout out to Aaron Overhead Doors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. Chadwick Ivory says, do you think our offense will incorporate some hot routes? And if so, where were those on Saturday?
They have them. Yeah. He's used a lot of them.
He's talking about when the guy, throwing the ball before the backer gets in there. We've got all those. We didn't have a protection situation where a guy was hot. By that I mean you got a base scheme there and some routes you run based on if the backer comes, I'm going to block him no matter what. If it's a hot, then you're going to out execute him. But that means that when he rushes, you're going to throw the ball to the back and try to beat him before the backer can get there. Now, it's hard to do that when a guy's coming right through the A-gap. If he's coming through outside, then you can throw the hot swing route a little bit better. But most of our protection going into the game was based on trying to hit our slots and tight ends, I think, because of the man coverage with Greedy Wilson on the outside. But we didn't get that much. We had the first one was wide open, to Miko and just barely missed it. But I think we got hots, that's for sure. But it just depends on if a team is blitzing like Grantham will do. I think you'll see more, deep shots. Just pick them up and throw it deep.
We saw a couple of those hot routes against South Carolina when they were bringing, was it Bryson Allen Williams?
Yes.
Coming through there. So they ran a couple. Jake hit two of those, I believe, in that one. And you got to understand, that ball's in the air. The kid turns around, and it's there. And I thought those were two.
Right.
As much as we want to give Fromm grief, he was able to see a couple of those. And I know a lot of people still want to bang on the quarterback situation. And, again, we don't have a dog in the fight. If you want to say Justin Fields is going to save it, fine. If you want to say Fromm is a established starter, fine. We don't have a
let's
dog
give it
in the
a
battle.
Week. Let's give it a week and see what happens this week. We'll know next week. Kirby has his press conference on Monday, what the direction he'll answer it head on. If they're going to make any kind of move, they'll do some of it. If they're not, then hey.
Well, he'll keep that as a surprise for Todd Grantham, I'm sure. I don't think he'll tell us.
Well, I don't know about that. I just expect our team to understand it's not a one man situation. No.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, a lot of people that want to bang on Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm did not miss tackles. He did not play defense. He did not punt. You know, he did not drop a kickoff, you know, fumble that. There's only so much one man can do. So, right. But now, when he's a man touching the ball every play and he has an off game, then, yeah, that a lot of a disproportionate amount of the blame will go to him. But at the same time, if you had kept held LSU to 19 points for the entire game, if your kicking game had kept flipping the field, then, you know, you're like, okay, more of the blame goes to this guy. But that's not what happened. That was a crap storm from beginning to end.
We said I know, day again, one.
But I wanted to drive that home. If you walk away from nothing else from this show, it wasn't a one-man production. That was a team loss.
But at the same by the same token, this is a team that's averaging 42 points a game and didn't scratch its butt the first half. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's why people – and we've defended everybody as much as we can, but I mean,
and we called him out too.
Didn't,
I mean,
didn't have as good, and he said it himself. He didn't have a good first half, and for sure, a lot of it was not his fault. Kirby's made some of those points too.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
We got to get some your pie, get a franchise. Did you sell one down there in Louisiana?
You know, man, you know what a your pie would do on Bourbon Street? That'd be like, oh, my God, you make so much freaking money.
You got to pay your employees well.
The biggest problem, though, is how you going to buy the property.
Yeah, that's everything down there is leased all heck and back. But if you do get a chance, again, for those people, I've gotten four emails in, I guess, the last 2 months, people that have tried your pie for the first time, and they always say, hey, I loved it, and they'll tell me what, you know, either they have the sandwich, you know, or what type of pizza they got, and they always rave about it and talk about going back again. And we could sit there and I could read all those testimonials, but that's not what we're trying to do here. I'm trying to get one of you folks to open up a Your Pie franchise, called Drew French, call him up, say, hey, I want to be the newest Your Pie franchisee. He's done it 57. They have 58 locations. He opened one. They've opened 57 more. You can't open that many and be that successful in such a short time if people aren't just clamoring to burst through your door.
Right.
And then when you do that, give us the free pizza for life coupons. I don't even know if they have one. I guess they'd have to make one up.
Every week, this guy.
I'm just saying, it's fantastic, and I'd be happy to have one for free. But seriously, when you get a chance, swing by Your Pie and have one of their pizzas. And for some people didn't understand the concept of it. You walk in, and it's very similar to like a Publix sandwich or a Subway sandwich. You basically tell them what dough you want, what sauce you want, however many toppings you want. It's not like, hey, every topping's $1.50. You know, it's the put as much on there as you want. By the time you pay for it, you go sit down about maybe 5 minutes after you're done walking through the line, maybe seven if they're on a busy day, they will bring you a stone-fired pizza that's just phenomenal. So perfectly customized, which is great because how many times have we been out, you know, as like a staff and looking at getting a pizza? Well, this guy doesn't like mushrooms. This person doesn't like pepperoni. This person's vegan. This person's, you know, gluten, whatever. Everybody can have their own.
You told me we'd never hire a vegan.
Well, we still won't.
Okay.
That's why the person that said, I'm a vegan, is no longer here. That's a fireable offense around there.
Agreed. All right.
Yeah. And those gluten idiots, too.
We're coming up. They do have gluten-free crust, though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. If you believe in gluten.
If you believe in gluten. All right. Before we wrap things up here, bye week on tap. Roddy, how you spending your weekend? Coach, how you going to spend yours?
Roddy's going to academia there.
Yeah, I must say Saturday. I'm swinging by academia for those special kegs that are going to tap. And then I actually would like to see my son. I have not seen him very much these past few weeks. So we'll probably do something as a family.
You're like Odysseus returning home.
Yes, I have to string my bow and shoot through the axe handle of 12 axe handles. So now it's we might – spend some time just hanging out as a family. Of course, he's probably asked some girl to homecoming or something, so I don't know. I haven't even really planned that far ahead, but I do like the idea of swinging by academia.
I'm going to be watching the Oconee Warriors volleyball in the state tournament streaming live from Carrollton.
There you go. Go Warriors in that one.
Good luck to the granddaughter there.
I am going to plant my ass on a couch and watch college football all day, not just the Georgia Bulldogs. And that's a special treat.
So
for
how much college football do you get to watch on a Saturday? Tell the people that think that...
almost none. Right. I tell people all the time. People think, oh, well, you cover college football. Maybe you're some kind of college football expert. I don't know... shit about anything other
do
than
not
Georgia
ask,
Bulldogs.
Yeah, do not ask a beat writer. Because, look, here, and I want to make this, because this is my pet peeve with journalists, you know, like the AP poll. If you are a beat writer, you do not deserve a vote in the AP poll.
Well, you spend 12 hours
if
every Saturday.
If you're a
Saturday
coach, you don't deserve it. Yeah, exactly. So, look, this game was at 3:30, right?
Yeah.
So, 9:30, we leave New Orleans. We get over to Baton Rouge. We set up. You know, we try to get internet that works. We try to find a place to actually do our work because there wasn't a whole lot of room there. We go out, watch the team come in. We put up a photo gallery. We check on recruits that are there. We do that. We watch the guys warming up. We put notes. We put out the travel roster, who's missing, who's there. We dig around for any last-minute injury notes. We cover the game. After the game's over, we do interviews. We do the coach's interview. We start putting up those interviews. We do a photo gallery. We write 6, 7, 8 stories. We leave when they lock the stadium. We've been locked in.
Yeah.
We've been locked into stadium. So by the time we're on the road, it's 11:30 at night, and we're catching the final one or two games on the radio.
Yep.
How much Oklahoma, Ohio State, Florida, Tennessee games do we watch? Zero.
Yeah.
So if we watch any of that, it's the next day or it's on a replay.
That's why I'm taking full advantage.
So if you're a voter, if you cover a team, if you cover Oklahoma and you're voting on Notre Dame and USC and these teams, only thing you did, you watched a highlight tape on ESPN, and however they spin that highlight is how you think of that game.
Man, you just got after it.
Wow.
You know what this is right here? That's the world's smallest violin saying, my heart pumps Coca-Cola for you.
No, I'm not even complaining about it. I'm just saying that.
I mean, wow, what a Ben-Hur day you had.
No, I'm just saying.
Hey, you guys got to be in condition to do all that.
No, we absolutely love it. It's the greatest job in the world. But I'm saying we are idiots.
I don't know anything else.
We are absolute idiots when it comes to anything besides Georgia football.
I agree. But I tell you,
I agree.
I agree. That it's hard to get a real grasp on everybody. But you do have the tapes and stuff like that. But I think what I just try to do is watch as many of them at a time. I mean, between the phone and tablet and two TVs, I mean, I'm trying to move around and catch them all.
But that's why you would be a perfect voter, because you're watching all this stuff. We're watching one team.
Yep.
And even then, when we make our predictions, we're wrong. So don't listen to anything a journalist says about a team they don't cover or even a team they do
now
cover.
Now that Roddy's convinced you that you should never listen to us.
Never listen to us ever again.
Let's wrap things up for this week. Folks, definitely enjoy your bye week. Shout out to all of our sponsors, Aaron Overhead Doors. We got Athens Ford, Champions, of course, for having us in. We're getting ready to crush those chicken tenders. Get over to your pie. Let's go see those guys. Saturday, hop over to Academia, get you a couple of cold beers.
1, 5, and 8 o'clock for live music.
365 game day and 11 alive. Thanks for having us on the page. We appreciate it, and we will catch you guys next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday is a can't miss program. We're going to have so much scam, so much stuff.
Coach is bringing the scoop next
about
Tuesday
about the future. Where things are going, every which way, recruiting, everything. Hey, how about that great recruit we got last week?
Yeah, Lewis signed. Huge pickup. We called that one. We told you it was coming.
Both of you guys did. Congrats.
We did.
Maybe I should listen to you guys.
No, that's all the time we got for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next Tuesday at noon.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.